There's plenty of examples out there of companies that hire category design consultants to lead them through their category design exercise. But what about if you want to do it yourself in-house? That's why we're talking to Howell Carver, CEO of Skiller Whale, who led his team on their own category design exercise. Welcome to the Category Thinkers Podcast, a feature of the Category Thinkers community. And while other category design content streams focus on success cases, we're different. We focus on the messy middle, people deep in the middle of their category design process. So on today's show, talking to Howell Carver, he shares his company's category design journey after attending a workshop by the Category Design Advisors and discusses the challenges they faced in defining their offering and how the workshop, along with the book Play Bigger, helped them create their new category called Live Team Coaching. He talks with today's hosts, Category Thinkers co-founder Mike Damphouse and Play Bigger co-author Kevin Maney, about how they sorted through the different ideas on their category name, how CEOs can shoot themselves in the foot by speaking over the room, and how category design creates a chain-linked defense. And if you are trying to make a splash at events this year, we suggest you check out one of our sponsors, my company, BeTheStage.live. Because we've seen companies spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to show up at events for the sole purpose of creating awareness and driving leads. But when your booth is one out of hundreds, prize wheels and merch just make you blend in with everyone else. Attendees feel this because they're trying to avoid eye contact with you while trying to figure out if their kid is going to like your giveaway, which makes your presence at the show a misfire and the follow-up messages as generic as that branded thermos. BeTheStage.live turns you into the talk of the trade show. We convert your booth into a live podcast studio where attendees are invited to share their expertise. The lights, cameras, and action make the onlooker stop in their tracks and get pulled in. Then we package up the content into something they can reshare while the event is still going, amplifying your on-site presence and creating a digital word-of-mouth engine. After the event, you're the one follow-up they're actually looking forward to. You want help with that? Check us out at BeTheStage.live. And if you need help radically differentiating or creating a point of view, check out our other sponsors, the Category Design Advisors. You can check them out at CategoryDesignAdvisors.com. They host these free weekly strategy sessions they call office hours, where any team that needs some help with category, whether it's trying to work out your POV with them, get some advice on how to align your team around category, just get a better understanding of where to get started, you can go to CategoryDesignAdvisors.com, book their office hours, and hop on a call with Damp and John themselves. And finally, what we really like for you to do is to stop listening to the conversation and be a part of it. And you can do that by joining our free Slack community at CategoryThinkers.com. There, you're going to find over 600 other category curious, category capable, category designers just like you, working out their POVs, sharing content, and helping each other succeed while attending our live events. For example, this year we've already had a couple with Sangram Vajra and co-author of Play Bigger, Al Ramadan. So if you want to be part of the conversation, you want to just stop listening, go to categorythinkers.com and join our free Slack community. Now, without further ado, we leave you with today's episode with Damp kicking us off in this conversation with Howell Carver. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Today, we've got a great episode with the CEO of Skiller Whale, Howell Carver. Howell attended a workshop with Kevin and I over in London, hosted by Concept Ventures, a little over a year ago, I think. And you know, we do so many of these VC workshops, and it's not every day that we get to follow up and see, hey, how did the outcome work for you? And Hal put together a video, which we're going to play at the end of the podcast, that documents what they did internally to build their category strategy. And so we thought this would be a great opportunity to look at what it takes to go from, I think it was a four-hour workshop, to having a category strategy and doing it internally. So Hal, welcome aboard to Category Thinkers, and Why don't we just start there? Why don't you go back maybe prior to the workshop?
Yeah.
Because I know you were a Play Bigger fan prior to the workshop. And then sort of just walk us through your timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say it's a real pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation from you both. So maybe I can start with the company. Skiller Whale had often faced this problem where we could sense that what we were doing was different to what people's expectations were when we said what we do is learning. So we're a company that does learning for software developers. I can go into much more detail about that and tell you about the category, of course. But whenever we were describing it to people, we found that we would start with something they knew and immediately start describing deltas. So if someone was like, well, I know what this online learning platform is like, we'd say, great, it's like that. But then here are the differences to that approach. Or if someone was like, my previous company, we brought in this external training consultancy, we'd say, great, it's like that, but here are all of the differences from that approach. And we lacked a language for defining what it actually was. And my co-founder, Haley, had previously been recommended this book, Play Bigger. And she said, I think you should read this. I was like, oh, all right, you know, I've got a reading list a mile long, but sure, I'll shell out for the book and I'll get around to it. And I was reading it and I was like, oh, like, this is our problem. And oh, this solution that's described here, this way of defining what you do as a different category, that's exactly what we need. It's not just that we need a kind of education as part of our sale. We also really need this definition of the thing that we are doing. So then when we heard about the workshop, Haley and I were, of course, we're going to go. Like we came to the workshop. I think we'd both reread the book. So we'd both read Play Bigger twice before coming to the workshop. So for us, it was an opportunity to get that kind of live feedback from people who have done this a lot of times, right? People who have the battle-hardened experience of taking categories to the real world, where we had kind of, we'd read the book and we'd tried to understand the concepts, but I don't, you know, we think a lot about learning theory at Skiller Whale naturally. And I think the kind of information only gets you so far. At some point, you want the kind of the wisdom from having done something multiple times and the skill to be able to do it again.
Got it. So you come into the workshop, you've already been thinking, you've read Play Bigger multiple times. Gracious that your investors are hosting this for you. What are your expectations? What do you think you're going to come away with?
What did I think we were going to come away with? I think I hoped that we would have the sort of magic answer. I think that's an unrealistic expectation, but what we did get is a lot of steering, right? We could come with our idea. So part of the workshop involved writing a kind of condensed version of the point of view and giving a name to the category. And because you folks were there and were able to give us that feedback straight away, the way that improved across that short period of time is something that would have taken us, like, I think we might have been able to improve it on our own, but it would have taken us weeks. And I don't know if we would have improved it as much. Like, I think trial and error gets you so far, but expertise and the experience and the wisdom that comes from having done a lot of stuff with categories, for me, was what was the injection that we needed to say, like, from the start of the workshop to the end, to be like, there's something in this. This isn't just a kind of, I don't know, nebulous thing that we're writing down. It's not just a series of exercises we're going through. This feels like something that we want to commit to and make core to the company, because we not only do we believe in the idea of category design, but we also believe in the stuff we're writing about what Skiller Whale does and the category we're developing, and how that's going to help us stand apart in not just in the market, but stand apart as a company.
Your category is live coaching, right?
Live team coaching. I appreciate you asking. Yeah. Very glad to get the chance to describe it. Yeah. So what we do is live team coaching. Essentially, the problem that most companies face is that the company outcomes and your ability to succeed is tied to the skills teams have, but those develop slowly if left to their own devices. And most learning isn't really built to cater for that problem. Like, learning is great for things like compliance and for making sure people know the right stuff to comply with laws. And learning that already exists is great for, like, people to explore their interests and get access to a buffet of information that they can go and sample from at their leisure. But if you want learning that's going to move the needle strategically, that doesn't really exist in the market. And we developed live team coaching to fill that exact need, because if what you want is a meaningful strategic outcome, then you need coaching that's very targeted so that it looks at only the things that matter to you as a company. And ideally, it's not going to waste people's time. So every individual should only be learning the stuff that is already a skill gap for them. And if you want learning that is going to really accelerate people, it needs to be about solving problems with human feedback, which in learning theory, this is called interactive learning. You need to get better at a skill by doing the skill, and you get better at it even faster if you can do it with a human to guide you and help you to grow. And those are the kind of core tenets of live team coaching.
Well, I'm just going to follow up on that, Howell, by saying, like, so the phrase live team coaching, so in the whole category design process, one of the things, you know, what you did and what we always do is you try to come up with some label that becomes a shorthand for that new thing you're presenting to the world. So since we're talking about that phrase, live team coaching, when did you come up with it? How did you come up with it? How did it land once you started using it?
Yeah, it was hard, actually. I think there's a famous quote in software development that there's only really two hard problems in computer science: cache invalidation and naming things. And this very much fell into the naming things half of that. And cache invalidation feels relatively simple by comparison. So after we had been at the workshop, we spent a lot of time talking about it. And we tried, so we have a third co-founder, Dave, we tried some approaches to category design with just the three of us, and eventually said, no, this needs to be the whole of the company's senior leadership team. So we organized some away time. We don't have an office, so when we meet up together, we call it an on-site rather than an off-site. We had an on-site with the whole of the SLT, which was like 1.5 days. We just booked a room at a hotel that's quite near my house. And then we had a half day here for like scones and tea to kind of celebrate what we had achieved. And I did a lot of preparation for that to work out the process to take everyone through. So I got everyone to read Play Bigger in advance to make sure they understood the essentials of it. And then I kind of asked them to kind of feed back to me what they had read, I think. And then we kind of went through a process. And I think one of the key points I emphasize to people is that this is not a marketing effort. This is a whole company thing. This is not about how we sell in the market and how we pitch. This should be how the curriculum team build curriculum. It should be how we look for coaches who are going to lead sessions. It should be, in fact, I need a more positive sounding word than in fact sounds, but it should be part of everything that we do. And the name came relatively late on in that process of the on-site we had. So I think it might have been suggested on the first day, but it wasn't the first thing we tried to address. So we started out, and I think this is actually advice that we got from you guys, we started out identifying what the problems were that we were solving. And in a way, we're lucky because we had enough customers even at that point that we could see a range of problems that we were solving for them. And we'd always been had relatively close relationships with our customers. So we knew specifically what impact we were having for their teams. And so we could say not just, the problem we're solving is they need a training provider. No, that wasn't the granularity we had. The problem they're solving is they wanted to build an application. They tried it in one technology and completely failed. We worked with them and they were able to build it in something like 12 weeks with the new technology that we made them good at using. And we worked with a team that was hyperscaling, so they couldn't hire fast enough. They wanted to lower the technical bar of their interviewing, knowing that they could improve people's technical skills with us if people were a good fit in other ways. And so we had these very concrete things we could latch onto and say, these are the problems that we're solving. And then we then kind of went through this process of trying to understand in depth the various problems for the different stakeholders around around what we do. And we tried to then come up with some kind of keywords almost that we could use. So I think for a period we were called like strategic coaching, or that was the name of our category. And we had a couple of other things. So we talked about deep coaching for a while. We like deep because we do a lot of ocean puns at Skillerwhale. You know, even the name itself, right, is a wordplay about orcas. And so like deep worked really well for us because deep is obviously another word for the sea. But it became very sort of branded. It started to feel too much like we couldn't imagine another company doing it, which is one of the litmus tests we learned from you, that we needed to try and meet with the category name. And so we tried to kind of work out the key elements of what we did, the part of the point of view that's the blueprint, right, that other people would have to copy if they were part of the category, that says this is what it takes to be doing this category of thing. And we worked those out. We looked at them and we're like, well, I think actually, you know, life coaching doesn't quite capture the fact that we're doing this. We are working on a sort of individual personalized way, but the impact we're looking at is for a team or an organization. And so we ended up on live team coaching, and we kind of challenged ourselves a bit, like, could we take the word live out of there? Would we really consider team coaching to be a sufficient? But no, eventually we decided that we couldn't make it smaller than live team coaching and still capture what we do. And that's the name that has stuck.
I love how the way you told the story was that you ended up on the name, right? And we tell people during the workshops and with our clients that the name is the last thing we care about. We want to get the POV and the problem and the ramifications and everything about it solved and nailed. And then what happens is almost a drop the mic moment, where the name of the category is just obvious. It can't be anything different than what you stumble on. And that's where you put the stake in the ground and you march forward. Let me unpack something else. So the process you went through, you brought your whole senior leadership team together, and you went through a multi-day, you know, beat all these issues up and discuss it and debate it. What did you find valuable about the process itself? It obviously, the value of the POV at the end and the category name is great, but amongst the senior leadership team and what it did for you as a CEO for your team members, did the process itself, going through the process, bring you value?
I think definitely yes. And I think it's because we didn't just make it a marketing exercise. We had tried that before, Haley and I. That was how we'd, in fact, before we even met you, we had this idea around deep coaching, and we had put together like marketing materials for it. When we brought everyone together, I think what we gained was this alignment. And so my job title at Skillerwell is CEO, and I think internal alignment is something I see as part of my job. And in that process, I discovered that people who were core to the company, so they're part of the senior leadership team, but hadn't been involved in our first attempt at this, they didn't know much about it. And the way they described what we did was wildly different to how I would describe what we did. So, for example, the word training. For me, training is a very strong turnoff. And I think most people, when they hear the word training, it's quite negative associations. And what I would hear from people is they would say, we do training that works like this. And like, I'd have this kind of internal like shiver of unease. I think because I think everyone loves learning and everyone hates training, right? Is my pithy epithet for this. No one actually likes to be trained. Even the word itself, like training, is what the person at the front of the room does while you are just a passenger, like in while they train in front of you, if you know what I mean. It's kind of a disempowering word. And so to hear people who I think of as really core to the company describe what we do as training, or talk about our value as being about learning and reducing turnover and churn in engineering teams, which is a side effect of what we do. But honestly, if that's your main goal, there are cheaper ways of achieving probably similar outcomes that we don't try and really compete with those kind of organizations that do that. And so there was a lot of alignment came from that. I think people realized in the process, oh, like I thought that our customers saw us like this, but actually they see us like that. And it's kind of a beautiful thing, because we have people who work in very different domains in that leadership team, right? We have a head of engineering, we have a head of people and talent, we have a CTO, a CRO, we have a head of sales, and all of those people brought together their like various bits of expertise, not just from the company, but from their careers. So having people who've led and scaled engineering teams to hundreds of software developers, and having someone who's run HR functions and people functions in engineering companies, having them together talking about what we actually do at a company turns out to be really valuable because they are in some ways reflective of our buyer. And in their previous companies, they would have been our buyer. And neither of those folks are the founders. We have someone else who has sold learning to big enterprises. And so getting that perspective of here's how enterprises think about this problem and here's what I've seen is then really valuable because that's not something that we as founders could have brought to this conversation. So I think it was felt really important to me to involve everyone. And I'm really glad that we did. In fact, before this, I actually brought up the slides I used to present these ideas to the SLT and sort of lead everyone through the 2 days. So I can tell you exactly the 7 steps in our process, if that's interesting. But yeah, it was a real team effort. And one of the things, by the way, if anyone is going to go and do this yourself, one of the things that is challenging that I actually called out to my SLT and said, I need your help with this, is as the person who's leading the process and as the person with the, in theory, the most senior job title in the room, it's really important that people aren't overly swayed by my opinion here. Like that was something I was really conscious of. I didn't want this to just be like, well, I'm coming in with this idea and I'm just bringing everyone to the same idea. And in fact, a lot of my ideas were changed over the 2 days, but it was something that I wanted everyone to be aware of. Like, don't let me dominate the conversation. If you think I'm doing that, you need to tell me. And I want you to tell me because we're going to get a better result if that doesn't happen.
That's interesting because we see that even when we're hosting the room where the CEO is in the room with the whole team. And we usually coach them ahead of time and say, look, let everyone in the room feel as equal as you. This is a completely, democratic process. We want to debate. We want to argue. We want to agree. And we don't want people to be biased because of whatever reason it may be. So very, very astute to point that out in the beginning. And the other thing I thought was cool about what you just described is how you involved all the different disciplines, right? This is, as you said earlier in the conversation, this is not a marketing exercise. This is a whole company strategy. It should be led by the CEO. Obviously, marketing is going to be the tip of the spear. Once everything's agreed upon, they're going to implement and they're going to communicate the category strategy. But boy, that when you're done and you've got it cast in stone, the category point of view and the strategy, it informs everything from product development to hiring to marketing and sales, obviously. And it's so powerful as an internal strategy.
100%. And I think that's been the thing, the very pleasant experience for me, right, was then taking it to the rest of the company and presenting it to everyone. And now I think our curriculum team has a justification for why we don't lower our standards, because we're not just interested in delivering slop, right? We're not just here to throw some learning out there into the world for people to look at. We have to be thoughtful and careful about the learning that we produce because it's key to the category. We aren't just doing learning that people might want to consume. We're doing learning that's actually going to make a strategic difference for their companies. And I see it everywhere. And I think now it's almost taken for granted by the people in the company. We actually haven't had loads of new hires since we produced the category and since we described it. But I think the people who we have hired since then have all got on board with the category, even though they weren't there at the launch of it, which also feels like a testament to the fact that it's become part of the core of the company now, which is where I think it belongs.
Yeah, and Hal, I want to actually just make sure I give you credit for how you ran all of this, and also how you handled it as a CEO. Because we hear from there's a lot of companies that we hear from who come to us and say, we tried to do internally what you just described that you did internally, but we couldn't pull it off. And that's how they have ended up coming back to us. And I've rarely heard of an internal, running of the category design play that's been as effective as what you guys pulled off.
Oh, well, thank you. I think, so before this, I was a CTO before starting Skillerwell, I was running and scaling tech teams for 10 or 11 years. But for a lot of that time, I was a consulting CTO. So I'd coach existing CTOs in a company, or I'd act as an interim for those companies. And just working with lots of different CEOs in a short space of time gives you a lot of insight into the ideas and the information that doesn't reach the CEO, or the impact on culture, where potentially I remember working in one company where everyone thought something was a bad idea, but the information just couldn't reach the CEO because of how they had set things up, how they'd created the sort of spheres of influence around themselves were basically non-existent. And that was how they wanted it. And you realize that with that kind of weight of power that you get as a leader, there's a huge amount of responsibility, but also a huge amount of ways, a massive number of ways to shoot yourself in the foot. And so that for me, one of my goals has always been to avoid the mistakes that I've seen others do, and to essentially be the person I wish I had worked with before as much as I can, which includes having the ability for people to like disagree with me, tell me I'm wrong. And again, I wonder if part of it is being a learning company, because people telling you you're wrong is like a wonderful opportunity for learning that doesn't happen enough. So yeah, and interestingly, with the process, we definitely learned as we went. So we, across the 1.5 days, we actually went through the whole process twice. So we did a sort of lower fidelity pass of everything, where we were like, okay, like we feel like we've got ideas here, but let's come back, because we want to kind of have a chance for those ideas to sort of sit and percolate, but also for us to see if they're informed by things we come to later. So we talked about the problems. We went in depth to the personas and like the shape of what the solution needs to have. We talked about the name. I wouldn't say we came up with the name. And I think we came up with the category blueprint. And I think that was day one. And then in the evening, I like drafted a point of view, but tried to keep myself very strictly to things I thought there'd been consensus about during the day. And then the next day I was like, okay, here's the point of view that I drafted up. Let's go back and talk about the problem we solve and see if we've changed our minds about that, or if we like want to inflect what we wrote before. Let's talk about the problem in depth. Does anything there feel like it needs changing? Okay, well, now if we take what we've got so far and what we've agreed on is right, does that change our thinking about the name? And okay, so let's look at that point of view. So it sounds like I should change this bit to that, and we should cut that. You said this, and should we put that in here? And so there was quite a lot of iteration. And I remember quite a long period where I just had like one thing showing on a monitor that everyone could see in this, I don't know, very like beige meeting room in a hotel. And it was just like a lot of staring, and people would be like, I think that second sentence feels really wrong now. And someone would be like, yeah, I was thinking that too. And like, we'd all kind of like dive in on it, and then we'd sit back and reread it again. And there was a point where I was like, I think it's right. I think we've got this. So it was actually a really joyful and fun process, which, yeah, slightly sad I don't get to do it again, but I feel like we've got the category right now. So
it's great. That's a great story. I want to hit on something else though, too, because one of the things that's true, if you're creating a new category, you're creating something new for the world, you have to educate, you have to explain. And one of the things that I've also liked about the way you've done things, I mean, that you've chosen to do this with a real sense of humor also, too. There's kind of a very definite vibe about the way you have gone about your education. So can you just talk first of all just about the need for educating your audience and conditioning the category, but also your approach, why you decided to do it that way?
Yeah, I don't think we ever questioned the humor thing. I don't think it ever came up. So when we were even naming the company, it's like right in the early days of the idea, Haley and I were having coffee together, and I was saying, I've been thinking a lot about learning, and I think there's a lot of the world focuses on providing knowledge, and what we're trying to do is provide skill, and that's a different thing. We're not about provision of information and people's like awareness or recall. We want people to be able to do a thing. So we want to get the word skill into the name of the company, but we also want to be able to get the .com. So like anything that's like skill growth, or, you know, I mean, those names sound really twee as well. I was like, I mean, this is us. We should make it a like hilarious joke. And then Haley gives me credit. I don't want to take credit unnecessarily, but sure, let's say I came up with Skillerwell first. But I think it was like, you know, just a lot of back and forth about like taking words that started with a similar sound and making them be skill, and then Skillerwell. And then she was like, you know, that's not awful. And now it's very weird because we see it like at conferences, you know, like there's like massive stands with our logo on it. It's so weird to me that this was just like a bad joke that's never quite gone away.
Well, I got to just say, you do have to say that you do have a bit of humor, because one of my favorite things I see when you're posting on LinkedIn, and I'm going to share it so we can use it in the promotion videos, is when you go for a run and you track and map out an orca on your run path. I smile ear to ear and think it's so fucking brilliant. So humor or brilliance, it goes either way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and when I went to a conference in Berlin, I did a run around the Tiergarten, and it was very easy to do a whale. Like, because the Tiergarten's so long, it just makes the body of a whale really nicely. You just have to like run in at the right bit. And then I looked at a map for a long time. I was like, you know, if I run up those streets there, that's going to be kind of like the tail. And then I can go like to the side a bit and then to the other side, and I'll make some nice like flukes on either side of the tail. And I actually, the dolphin in Central Park that you just showed was the first thing I tried to get ChatGPT to help me with, but it doesn't do like spatial things very well. So I asked someone in the company, if anyone could volunteer to try and come up with a route. And then someone was like, I found this place in Central Park with a dolphin. I was like, that is perfect. We quite early on defined, as part of brand values for the company, that we wanted to be known for intelligence, playfulness, and learning. Orcas fit quite well for that. So we obviously have an orca as our logo, and it's killer whale as part of our name. Orcas are actually part of the dolphin family, not the whale family, but they're a very like intelligent kind of animal. And so they turn out to work quite well if you want to portray intelligence and playfulness. And for us, because me and my co-founders are all quite big fans of like bad puns and wordplay, it's always felt natural. And so in a way, the brand of the company is kind of tied to our personalities. Even before we got in, before we started thinking about the category, it was a much more of a brand decision that, again, now infects everything. So if you're learning with us, and if you're a customer and you want to see a demo of how we work, you'll see the Sharks and Spencer account. I don't know how well that joke internationalizes, but Marks and Spencer is like a very big chain of like supermarkets in the UK, and like the learners in that account are called like Squid Rock and Tuna Turner, and a lot of like Shark from like Shark Ruffalo, Shark Goldberg, I don't know, Shark Wahlberg. And It's been a kind of core part of, I think, because it's something we share as founders, it's become part of the brand identity of the company. We have a Slack channel called Fishy Puns. We have a database. So if someone on the curriculum team is like, oh, I'm going to create a problem for learners to work on, where they're going to have a database of different companies in this industry, they can go and see what have we used before, which is like ocean puns about the music industry, like Island Records, Electronica, drum and bass. Like, we have like a real database now that we've built up. And so I think it's partly that that's our personality, and it's partly because we have found it works. And it's, maybe it is related to the category in more ways than I'd thought, but it's kind of a key part of the company's personality as being playful. We're quite careful with like where we draw the line on it, because we also can be serious about learning, and we just try and do it in a fun way. There's good learning theory behind that. So there's a model for learning called the affective model for learning, affect in the sense of like the emotions you're experiencing while something happens in the field of psychology, that when we learn by tying experiences and information to emotions that we're feeling. So we actually learn best when we are feeling things. And so making people laugh, and I don't know, or like laugh at us even, is a way to help people learn. And it's why I think so much of training, which most people find really boring, is also really ineffective for learning, because when you are bored, you are almost by definition not really feeling very much at all. But that kind of very slowly, sorry, is coming back to your question of how we educate people about the category and how we talk about it. And I think what we've done is we use the category to talk about what we do as being a different approach. So I do a lot of talks about sort of, if you rethought learning from the ground up to be effective for strategy, what would you make it look like? And then we almost give the category name as an afterthought. You know, it's like live team coaching is the kind of the outcome of all of those things together. We have definitely found that we need to show people how it's done and educate them in advance. And I definitely, the category has helped with us knowing the right words to say and for our external facing people to be really aligned about how they describe it so that people aren't hearing different messages from different people they talk to.
Well, it's interesting. You've totally nailed something that, you know, categories are built by people. They're not built by great advertising. They're not built by, you know, snappy slogans or beautiful logos. They're built by people that believe in the category. It's a movement, mm-hmm. right? And what you've done is you've dangled your point of view out there to people with a bit of humor. And they finally get that emotion, right? They adopt the category through emotion and commitment. And then finally, you know, once they've agreed that you are the dominant category of choice, they've done that not through logos and features and benefits, but they've done it through their storytelling, the way you work, the way you communicate. And then, you know, you've set the hook.
I was going to say, when you said we dangled it in, like the image in my mind, I was like, we should use this on the website and have a picture of you, Damp, holding a fishing line.
I just rigged up a bunch of my fishing rods today, actually.
Oh, right. Okay, perfect. Well, if you catch any orcas, do let us know. I think what we do as well is we talk a lot about ROI. And this actually sets us apart in learning generally, because most companies focused on L&D really struggle to measure ROI at all. This is generally a big problem with learning, is that the input and outcomes are like kind of assumed to be related, but not very strongly. And so generally people, it's a race to the bottom in terms of cost for the income, because in terms of cost for the inputs of learning, because people aren't really good at measuring the outputs. One of the things that makes us quite different is that we focus a lot more on like immediate and medium term measures for outcomes of learning. So when we work with a team and they say, we're trying to solve this problem, we will say, well, what are the metrics that you already have, which that problem either measures or is a proxy for measuring? You know, your team aren't shipping things fast enough. Well, let's have a look at how many pull requests of code are being closed every week. Let's see how many review cycles you're getting on each bit of code before it finally gets accepted. And those metrics are things that we can then impact. And I think to me that kind of comes back to the category, that approach, because what we're doing is intended to be strategic. We want to be how the CTO or how the director of engineering achieves their goals. And in fact, this is super exciting. We're about to publish a press release with the credit card fintech startup called Plio, where we worked with a couple of hundred of their engineers, and they saw a 40% increase in productivity from the developers as a result of working with us. And I think that kind of thing isn't possible unless you gear your whole company around the approach and that outcome in mind. You can't start with a sort of a different approach to learning and get that kind of outcome. So even though that's ROI, and like obviously it's going to be a marketing exercise for us to like talk about that at large, it's also very strongly linked to the category, because the category enables that kind of result.
Well, so maybe catch us up on just how it's going. Like, created this category, you've pushed it out there. How is Skiller Whale doing? What is your situation? Have you raised money lately? Are you going after more? Where do you sit?
We're going to be going after more probably in the first half of this year. We'll start fundraising for a growth round. I mean, I think things are going super well. One of the things we've just launched. So let me take a step back. The long-term vision of the company is to move beyond working with engineering teams. The big trend globally of automation and AI has this trailing wake behind it, where close to 400 million people will be left without a career in the middle of their lives. So we have this global need to reskill people from one occupation to another, one career to another. And that's quite a lot of those folks are knowledge workers. So the kind of people that we've historically thought of as in quite secure jobs. And we see Skiller Whale's overall mission as being the solution to that global problem. So moving beyond tech teams so that when this group of people has their industry largely automated, we are able to find those people homes in new industries and make them not just knowledgeable enough for their job, but capable at their job, good at doing something that they couldn't do before. So for us, one of the big moves we've always wanted to make is moving away from hard tech skills, or like not just doing that. And we've recently launched an approach to, the world calls them soft skills, we call them power skills, because we soft skills like really underplays how valuable they are. And I think of them as power skills because I think they're a force multiplier on whatever other skills you have. If you're a good software dev, who can also communicate your skills as a software dev, significantly more valuable. So for us, this has been one of the really exciting things at the start of this year, is like we are now making this move towards being able to work in other skills that aren't just particular programming technologies for software teams. And that has already been proving massively popular. We're still very much in startup mode. We still need to fundraise to survive, but we've grown over 2x since we introduced the category. I think getting closer to 3x since introducing the category. And I think I credit the category with the level of company alignment we have, and with the way that we are able to help customers latch on to what we do. We don't have these conversations where people are like, oh, so it's kind of like this other thing. People instead are like, yeah, no, I get it. And actually, I haven't seen other companies doing that. And we're like, no, we don't think so either, but they'll come along at some point.
Do you see the next round of funding you're going to, do you see that round and pursuit to be different than the last round now that you've done category design? Like, how do you see the category design work and your point of view influencing how you're pursuing that next round and talking to investors?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I was thinking only the other day about describing us as having a $0 billion market, which I think was an idea I stole from you, right, Dan? I remember you talking about that. I don't know if I've quite got the guts to do that, but certainly I think so. We've actually done one fundraise since the naming and, you know, birthing the category into the world, but that was all internal investors who kind of get it anyway. I think what would be different now is we really talk a lot about not necessarily the category itself, but the fact that we are doing a different category. So when we talk about competition, we have to say, well, who do you consider competition? Like we're developing a new category, so we can talk about other companies that do learning and development, but really we're not chasing the same budget as them. We would typically get either project budget or we'd get budget lines get created for us. We get levered into that budget temporarily if people are in the wrong part of the budget cycle, but generally speaking, that's not really how people use us. So how do you want to think about competition? Because honestly, we're not sure we have any outside of like money people would spend on hiring or freelancers to solve these problems for them instead of their internal team. So I think that's a big part of the fundraise. I think we do spend a bit of time educating the investors on the approach, on the category itself. I think they're definitely more interested in investing in the company rather than the category. But what I think is interesting is when it comes to the idea of what's the word? Defense, how a competitive advantage. How do you have a sustainable competitive advantage? For me, one of the things the category defines nicely is what's sometimes called a chain link defense. In a chain link defense, a competitor has to basically drop everything and copy you entirely because it's not enough to copy a small part of the model. So if you think about like when Dell was getting started and Dell computers would like situate themselves close to the factory so they could do this just-in-time ordering, just-in-time manufacturing of very custom-built machines. For someone to compete with Dell was a massive investment. They would have to entirely restructure their company around the idea they couldn't just copy one part of Dell's model. And I think the category feels like it gives us the same thing, that an incumbent can't just decide to copy us a bit. You have to do the whole thing and invest an awful lot to be able to do what we do and to stand a chance with competing with us.
I like that. I'm going to have to borrow that one from you about the chain link defense, our new category.
I like it a lot. And it's I think it's underused because, you know, particularly at the moment, a lot of people's defense is just like the word data. And maybe you wave in the general direction of artificial intelligence. I mean, we have data, we use bits of AI where it's appropriate, but I don't think it's not as big a defense as being able to say, well, the whole company is oriented around it. Like, people outside the company cannot write curriculum in the way that you have to write curriculum for our model, because no one outside the company has experience with writing curriculum in that way, apart from people who like worked for us and then left. It's not a trivial thing, and it's core to the value proposition that we offer.
Very cool.
So what would you recommend if you were to bump into a CEO at one of your VC conferences and they just got their A round, they think they have a new category, you're probably going to recommend Play Bigger. What else would you recommend to that CEO to think about and focus on his category design journey?
I would say, firstly, I'd say find people who've done it before. Again, like the workshop that we had was really helpful in like very quickly letting us iterate on our thinking. I think a really key part is that it's a whole company effort. And I think it's too easy to see it as just affecting marketing and sales. I think it has to be internalized much more than that. And I think there's something about being willing to be surprised and having your mind changed, particularly if this person is a CEO that I'm talking to. I want them to be very willing to be told that they're wrong and have the rest of their team around them say, no, this is the way it should be, because it feels super important to me that it's this all sides effort where everyone is going to come away extremely bought in because they have created it, not just because they've had it explained to them or they've been told it. Those feel like the key points. But I mean, if you've just raised Series A, I feel like it's quite hard, actually. I'd be saying try and do it sooner if possible. Use Series A money to refine and invest in the ideas. But I'd want to have the category ideas in place earlier than that, because it feels so core to me. It feels like, I don't know how you would, I feel like you'd have to have quite a bit of luck along the way to be able to build the company up to that point. If you were developing a new category without having consciously realized that you're developing a new category.
Yeah, interesting point.
So one point that you made, which I think is really powerful, is focus on the problem. And early in the conversation, you told us how you read the book. You guys were focusing on the category, but you weren't quite moving it forward yet. And the one thing that shifted was you had your own perception of the category and what you think you could be building. But then after the workshop, you got some third-party perspective. It's between perception and perspective is so strong. And, you know, I would probably add to your CEO recommendations, you know, work on it as hard as you can, but have some outside perspective once in a while. Could be a board member, could be an investor, could be a friend. Doesn't matter who it is, but sometimes you get too wrapped up in your own internal vision and you've got blinders on. And It can be as simple as an afternoon conversation like we had that can all of a sudden break loose. And you took that workshop and the frameworks we shared with you and the concepts and best practices, and you were able to successfully go pull it off. And I, you know, I remember seeing that video whenever you published it, and maybe a year ago now, and thinking, wow, that was awesome. They listened to everything we said and they implemented it. So hats off to you.
Well, thank you. And genuinely thank you for the workshop, right? It was really useful to us at a critical time, I think. And I think I said this already, so I'm just repeating myself, but being able to get the iterations in that fast, being able to say, okay, here's what we think our point of view is. Here's the kind of the name and the core of the category, and having people who really understand the ideas and have done it before, who are like, the name's an improvement, but you need to do better. Like, this isn't there yet. And like, are you sure about this point in your point of view? Are you sure that's a key criterion? Like, that is how was a kind of flywheel effect, right, in our thinking.
Yeah, that's great. Well, listen, we appreciate you sharing all of this with us, and we appreciate the fact that you're because of our time zones. You're after the kids went to bed, some precious nighttime, and we appreciate your commitment to us and everything you've been doing and sharing with the world. And keep the humor going. You know, we could add to your CEO recommendation list to the startup CEO, design a logo that you can run on Central Park, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I love it. The tricky thing, actually, which I hadn't realized before, is our logo has these disjoint lines, right? Like, I'd have to do like some massive jumps to get from like the tail of the orca over to the angle buckets on the side.
I love it. Well, listen, thanks so much. Appreciate all you're doing. Appreciate the conversation, and good luck to the category. And I can't wait to stay in touch and see how it's growing.
Awesome. Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks. Good to talk to you again, and keep in touch. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
As promised in the conversation, here's a bonus clip. The following was the post Skiller Whale released last year, talking about their internal process of category design.
Hi, my name's Howell. I'm the CEO and one of the founders of Skiller Whale. We recently embarked on a project to clearly articulate our category. I'm going to tell you how we did that and how you can do the same thing. The reason this matters is that categories are the boxes in our head that we fill when we make decisions. We think about the category first and then decide what to buy. And if what you're doing is different to other things that exist, not just a better kind of a thing, but a different thing altogether, then you need to create that category. You need to create a different thought pattern and a new box in people's head that they might fill with your product. We actually tried this once before. We tried to express how we were different from the competition using this idea of deep coaching, and it didn't really work for us. I think that's because we were using a term that felt like a brand, and a category needs to be something that anyone can claim, not just one company's brand. It also wasn't immediately clear what deep coaching means. Deep had to be explained via an acronym, so this didn't really work for us as a category. We went back to the drawing board and we tried again. The first thing you should know about this process is that it is hard work. It is not easy. It requires sustained, abstract thought with a group of people. We included all of the company's senior leadership team in our category creation journey. We took 3 or 4 days out of the office and we had a lot of very intense conversations back and forth to really get to the bottom of it. And the starting point is to define what problem you're solving, which is really fundamental and really difficult. Because when you go around in a circle and everyone says the problem you're solving, you'll probably find that you solve 10 different problems and everyone's answer is right to some extent. The hard work is distilling all of those down to one common thread that encapsulates the underlying problem that every kind of aspect that someone's bringing up has in common. Once you've done that, you can name your category. Naming things is really hard as well, but fundamentally, your name should be a response to the problem as you've described it. So however that problem is phrased, the name should really talk about the solution to that problem in as few words as possible. Once you've got that, you can define the category blueprint. That's really the key aspects of the category. What should a product or service that's doing this thing, what are the minimum requirements? What's the bar for you to recognize it and say, yes, that really is something doing the category. That is part of this category. If you're creating a category, you should definitely expect other companies to come along following you that are trying to do the same thing. In fact, if anything, that's both flattering and validating that what you're doing is genuinely a different thing. The category blueprint really then defines the minimum requirements for those competitors to come along later and be able to claim, yes, we're part of the same category. Once you've done all of that hard work, the next thing is to pull that together into the point of view. And the point of view talks about the problem as you've identified it. It talks about the consequences of that for the people involved. It talks about your category name and the blueprint. What does it take to solve that problem for people? And then it talks about the consequences for the people now that the solution exists. So here's the outcome of that process for us. Let me tell you about our category. At the core of it, the problem we solve is that organizations are constrained in what they can achieve by the skills of the people they already have. Left to their own devices, those skills develop slowly and inconsistently. And that's particularly painful in technology teams, where there are always new opportunities, new technologies, new tools that you could be using to go better, to do faster work, to produce a better result for your customers. Even highly motivated engineers with all the resources in the world still need to know what they're lacking in order to learn about it. So even the engineers who are keenest on learning still need guidance. And if your technical strategy relies on having highly skilled people, you just can't leave that kind of thing to chance. So instead, if leaders see a skill need, they will automatically turn to hiring almost without questioning it. We don't rely on our teams to learn in order to meet strategic needs. And that's really because existing learning isn't optimized for helping with those top-down strategies. The other thing that people will turn to is they'll ask their team to work together in pairs to encourage sharing of ideas. I think that time is valuable. It helps produce better code, but learning is going to be a secondary outcome of that at best. Most people just aren't good teachers. Most people can't diagnose skill gaps, and most people won't be aligning their learning to your strategy. So this ends up being a very time-consuming way to get learning and probably isn't very effective. So what you need instead, the solution to this problem, is live team coaching. That means coaching that's targeted to individual skill gaps for a team-level strategic outcome. No time should be wasted on skills that people already have or don't need for their work. Every hour should be useful and relevant. It means coaching with a rapid individual feedback loop from a live expert. Their presence means people can have questions answered, so learners gain deep understanding rather than just a superficial awareness of a new topic, and gain new capabilities through solving problems and getting feedback from the expert in real time. And finally, it means coaching that happens in small time units during working hours, continuously at a regular cadence, which optimizes for learning retention and it minimizes the hit to productivity. With a more able team, organizations succeed more, and that becomes visible in their internal metrics and it's demonstrated by their business outcomes. We know that companies get more productive with live team coaching. We've had customers increase their velocity by a factor of 4, and they find the same results as hiring new people, but at 1/6 of the cost. This is the future of professional learning, but it's also the future of how organizations will think about molding their workforce capabilities to achieve their strategic goals. So, if you're on the category creation journey, I hope this has been useful to you. I'm going to follow this video up with another one about how we've mobilized the category. So please feel free to get in touch if you'd like more information about what we did.
There you go. Another conversation designed to help you think like a category designer. Please support our sponsors, categorydesignadvisors.com and bethestage.live, because they're the ones footing the bill for this thing, so you can enjoy it. But more than anything, we'd love to hear from you, whether it's in our community or if you could leave us a review for this podcast if you're enjoying this thing, subscribe to it.